Blog Talk Radio.
Contending for Truth Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, we are really, this is an exciting show tonight. I am broadcasting live from Ken and Beth's car. We took a trip down to shut in and did some singing and had some fellowship, and I am on my way home seeing some parts of Texas that I haven't seen yet, a little south of where I live. It's a beautiful spot. Let's say it again. I love Mesquite, and I love Dallas, because even though we're really close to downtown here, I'm a good 10 miles, 15 miles from downtown, it still feels like I'm out in the middle of nowhere. We are driving through some beautiful, beautiful spot right now. We're going to have a great show tonight. Of course, me and Rodney are going to do some talk about some politics and some current events and some things that are going on. We're going to laugh some. We're going to cry some. And with no further ado, I'm going to pass it over to Rodney Lee Conover. Rodney, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, but this week I forbid you this crying thing. I'm tired of you crying during the show. I don't think it adds to the show, you crying all the time. So let's just laugh and do the other stuff. More laughing, not so much with the crying. Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds great, Rodney.
I thought we would talk this week, if it's okay with you. Now, are we still going to have our candidate on the show this week? Because I was all excited about that.
That is next week. We're going to have Frank Cicaturo, who's running in the 4th District in New York, and we're going to have him next week, next Thursday night, is when he's scheduled for.
Okay. And that's our good friend Ken Brolin, is the campaign manager out there in Long Island, right?
Exactly.
That's good. I'm looking forward to talking to Ken. He's too busy to talk to me normally, so at least I'll be able to talk to him on the radio. That'll be nice.
Yes, he will be with us.
Well, in lieu of talking to our candidate Frank, and I am looking forward to that. I thought that was tonight. I'm actually glad that it's next week because I didn't do any show prep to talk to the candidate. I just thought I would wing it. That's always better anyway, talking to a candidate. I hate it when they've got all these preconceived notions for candidates and they've got their top five questions they want to ask the candidate. I like just winging it with candidates. I just like, because I don't like it when the candidates have the questions in advance. I don't like that at all, Scott. I think they should just have to answer questions just off the top of their head, even though that's not how government works. You know, like, I think it's silly, for instance, these debates. I think debates are silly, and we put all of this attention And everybody puts all of this determination and analysis and all this importance on the debates, you know? And, oh, who won the debate? And, oh, he got it the best of him on the debate. And that's how people make up their minds. And they make these huge decisions about the future of the country based on these stupid presidential debates, Scott. And that is probably the last thing you want to use as your determining factor for picking a president. The last thing you want is a guy who can debate well, because that's probably the snake oil salesman. You know what I mean? You don't want the guy with the snappy answers. You don't want the slick guy, or the guy with the one-liners and the put-down artist, or the guy that has the best canned response, or the man with the who can come up with the snappy responses and the you know, shifting his eyes. And you know, you don't want him or her. You want the person that will take their time, consider every option, confab with the experts, sit down, contemplate, study, research every possible answer, and then, and only then, consider several options for your answer, put it to all the experts, put it out there for debate, get all the advice, get all the input, and then make a determination. That's the person that you want as the president. You want a good manager. You want somebody thoughtful and someone reasonable, somebody who measures their need. But instead, what do, Scott? We have these stupid debates, and the country picks the guy who, quote-unquote, wins the debate. So we end up with people like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who are really good at reading a teleprompter, and people who are full of empathy and people who can be snappy. And everybody was so disappointed in Mitt Romney. Remember that, Scott? Remember the debates in 2012? What was your impression?
Well, you know what? You're so right. And I love a good debate. I love a good debate. And I took debate in high school. But you know what? It is not about the person who can stand up there and debate the best. And we not only that, we watched some of them knocked over. And I've never been a great big Rick Perry fan. But when Rick Perry gets knocked over because he forgets a couple of words from the podium, I've been in the pulpit off and on 30 years for out of my life, and there's been a lot of times when I have just totally lost my words. I've lost my words talking on Blog Talk Radio, come to try and say something inside I can't talk. That doesn't make somebody not qualified to be a president. And I, you know what, I'm glad that they're cutting these debates way back. I love to watch them. I love to see them interact, and I love to hear them answer the questions. But they are not a good litmus test for who's the president.
I mean, let's say you got the smartest guy on earth. Let's say you got the best manager, the most reasonable, the smartest tactician out there. But, you know, let's say he's not good looking, or she's not good looking, or they're overweight, or they, you know, they maybe they got a lisp, or they, you know, maybe they got one eye, or they're in a wheelchair or something. You know, maybe they're not a good debater. Maybe they don't like debating. Maybe they're shy. You know, who knows? All of a sudden, that completely disqualifies them from being president, because the stupid American public, they've become so used to them standing up, you got to be a good debater, got to be able to stand up there and debate the other guy. You got to win. You got to get over him. You got to do the snappy put down. You got to do this. That's ridiculous, Scott. I mean, no wonder we end up with a bunch of clowns in office. You got to stand up there and think of a bunch of Henny Youngman jokes. You got to be the put down artist. It's almost like you're a stand up comic and you're being heckled by a bunch of drunks, and you got to have all your all your heckling comebacks, and you got to be ready. The people asking the questions, they're going to have a singer, and you got Newt Gingrich has got to Well, that's a got-ya question. Oh, did you see Newt Gingrich? Boy, he stood up to that Candy Crowley. He did this and he did that and all that. Man, all that Mitt Romney, boy, he would have become president, but that second debate, oh, he let Barack Obama off the hook. That's stupid. I mean, it's just ridiculous. No wonder the country is in the shape it's in. We, you know, we pick our leaders based on this completely irrelevant skill. I mean, it's like if you were to want someone to paint your house, and you pick the painter based on how quickly they could open the can of paint. It's like, wait a minute, that's got nothing to do with how good a painter they are, how quickly they could open the can of paint. Okay, the guy opens the can of paint slowly, but he's a great painter. My God. Oh, but listen, this other guy, he opens that can of paint really quickly. Look at him. He opened it in 3 seconds. Look at him work that screwdriver around that can of paint. He had that thing opened in 5 seconds. Your guy took a minute and a half to open that can of paint. He's a lousy painter. No, he's not. He's the greatest painter on the earth. He painted my house 3 years ago. It's still looking beautiful. I mean, it's just pathetic, Scott. And we've been doing this for how long? Forever. Ever since the advent of, you know, when was that? At least, Scott, back when Lincoln was debating, what was it, Douglas? The Douglas-Lincoln debates, they were the first really
right.
famous debates, weren't they?
They
back
were.
Back then, you know what they did? They would let each guy talk for, like, you know, 15 minutes. Now, that's fine. Now, if they would do the debates like that, okay. Now, there you go. Let the guy stand up there and tell you what they believe in, tell you what they were going to do. But they don't do that anymore. If you had a Lincoln-Douglas-style debate, then you could probably glean enough information to make some sort of educated determination about what kind of person you had before you and were they qualified, or maybe not so much were they qualified, but does their philosophy reflect the qualities that you see somebody that would, you know, head the country in the direction that you support? But they don't do that. Heck, they don't even allow the candidates to address each other anymore. Remember, it wasn't even that long ago, Scott. They would allow the candidates to ask each other a question. Remember that?
That's right.
Why don't they do that anymore?
Well, that would mess up their whole plan of letting the people decide.
I would love to see, you know, something that disturbed me, something that just flat out disturbed me to my core in the last debate, or the last election. In the second debate, they started to go round and round about this Benghazi attack. And it really was the moment where Mitt Romney, he really should have put Obama on his back.
Yeah.
He should have put him on the canvas. Because Obama is really, really a weak leader when it comes to foreign policy. Barack Obama's in over his head when it comes to foreign policy. Barack Obama is one of two things when it comes to this Benghazi attack. He is either doesn't have any idea what he's doing, or there was something going on over there that is so much bigger than what we know about, and they have just successfully covered it up. It's one of those two things. And we may never know what it is.
In fact, I think it's a combination of three things. I think, number one, he's inept. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's a community organizer. He just has no administrative experience. Number two, I think they were doing something over there. They don't want us to really know exactly what was going on. And number three, they used the opportunity waste. Never let a catastrophe, never let a crisis go to waste as a way to blame it on a YouTube video, not to get the guy that made the YouTube video, but to crack down so that we, it's cracking down on our First Amendment rights. I think it was a direct attack on our First Amendment rights. If we can crack down on this video, if we can show this video is a problem, then we've got a way, that we've got a reason for legislating to where not anybody can just put anything they want in a video on the internet. I think it's, I think it was three-pronged, and I think it's all three of them.
Well, you're seeing that today. There was two really important stories that, by the way, that we covered at joeforamerica.com. What's that, Robbie? joeforamerica.com. Where can you find that at?
www.joeforamerica.com.
Oh, I've never heard of that before. Oh, it's joeforamerica.com. Anyway, we covered both of these stories, and you're absolutely right, Scott. One of them is this whole net neutrality thing. The new commissioner of the FCC, appointed by President Obama, is the daughter. She's got a really funny name. Maybe you could help me out with it. But she is the daughter of a former South Carolina Democratic senator. And for the life of me, I can't remember her name. Her name's like Mignon or something. It's like Filet Mignon. It's, that's her first name. I'm going to walk into the office. It's literally, you'll know her last name because it's a famous senatorial name. I'm going to pull it up here because God knows we need to fill time here. No, I just want to pull it up here so I get it right. Hold on, buddy. It is this, you brought this up, it's these proposed considerations for these basically internet regulations. The FCC is going to start regulating the internet as if it, and this is the FCC, of course, is the Federal Communication. They're going to start regulating as if it's radio and television, as if the internet is broadcasting, okay? Because they tried to regulate, they tried to muzzle the internet with the Fairness Doctrine and other ways, and it failed. So now they're trying to do it through the FCC, and they're trying to do it through Verizon, AT&T.
James Clyburn's daughter.
And, yes, Clyburn. And her name is Mignon, right? Is it Mignon?
That's what I'd say. I'd say just like filet mignon. Mignon.
Yeah. Can you imagine a guy naming his daughter after a cut of steak? Mignon. I mean, I don't,
only
you say
a liberal.
Filet Mignon. And this guy Clyburn, James Clyburn, yeah, he's from South Carolina. Now, he's got a long, long history of voting against, oh, he's a current senator, isn't he? No, a current representative,
correct.
I'm sorry. He's not retired. He has got a, can you imagine this guy naming his daughter Filet Mignon?
Mm-hmm. Only a liberal.
I mean, what, does he have his son, another, you know, does he have other, you know, offspring, you think, like choice? And he's like, this is my wife, butt steak. And, you know, can you imagine that? And over here is flank. Over here is flank. That's my dog, ribeye. And I don't know, it's just, to me, it's embarrassing. Mignon Clyburn. Mignon.
His other kids are named Angela and Jennifer.
Oh, well, thanks. Thanks for stepping all over that joke for me. Anyway.
But she seems to be the oldest. Maybe they learned their lesson after they had that one for a while that they might go back to a normal name.
Thank you. So her and Porterhouse both ran, and she got appointed as commissioner of the FCC. Now, her dad, James Clyburn, long, long history of voting against net neutrality. Net neutrality is simply, in a nutshell, just means keep the internet free. In other words, not free like you don't have to pay for it, but free meaning it's wide open. complete freedom of speech. That's, of course, what everybody wants. Not the Democrats in charge, but, I mean, normal people. But this cat, James Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, he has a long history of voting against Internet neutrality. So, of course, Mignon comes along and gets appointed FCC chairman under Obama. And what are they doing, Scott? They're immediately trying to clamp down on free speech on the Internet, and by God, they've done it. They are going to do two things. Number one, they are going to start clamping down on speech on the Internet. And they're going to do it through Verizon, through Comcast, through AT&T, through the ISPs. The ISPs is your Internet service provider. In other words, they're not going to get you on your web page. They're going to get your Internet service provider is going to start having to clamp down on certain sites. And, gee, Scott, who do you suppose that will be? Do you think it'll be the liberal sites or the conservative sites when Mignon Clyburn is calling the shots under Barack Obama?
Oh, it's going to be us in a heartbeat. They've been wanting to for decades.
I would say so. And the second bill that they got up there and they're considering, it's not a bill, excuse me, the FCC doesn't write bills. The FCC has passed another plan for consideration, and that is a plan called paid priority. Paid priority means that AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast can set into motion a plan where if people pay, well, I shouldn't say people, let's face it, it's going to be big companies. If they pay, their services will go through faster and first and faster than everybody else. In other words, let's say you want to put up your web page and you want to download something and you want to get your thing through. Well, if somebody else paid, theirs will have priority over yours. So it's not going to be first come, first served. It's not going to be neutrality. It's not going to be equality. It's going to be, hey, some guy paid some money. Somebody had some money to get in line in front of you. In other words, the Internet's going to, if it's up to them, the Internet will be ruined. Okay, Scott? They're going to ruin the Internet.
Now, definitely.
Mignon, I'm just going to say, when I refer to the FCC, and Obama, I'm just going to say Mignon and Porterhouse, okay? So you'll know who I'm talking about. And let's see, who else do we got here? I think Michelle, she'll be T-Bone. Mignon, Porterhouse, and T-Bone. Now, am I being racist? Because I didn't name her Mignon. Her dad did.
That's right.
I think it's terribly racist to name your kid after a cut of a beef. Don't you?
I think it's very insulting to cows.
By the way, did you see Michelle Obama, the tweet that she did? She had herself in some place in the White House, and she was holding up like a white piece of cardboard or construction paper, and she had a tweet on this piece of cardboard, and it was like the tweet thing. What do they call that, hashtag?
It was a hashtag,
did you see
yeah.
It? Yeah, it said hashtag my balls itch. I don't know, what does that mean for the first lady to do that?
Ronnie, I tell you, when I first saw, I saw the original one, which was serious. You know, we've got those girls that have been kidnapped over there. But it's been taken, it's been used for a lot of things. But I'll tell you, here's how I know how inept this White House is. There wasn't anybody around them to say, wait a minute, you're holding up a card in front of you that somebody can take and do anything with and make all kinds of fun out of it. Nobody around them with any more common sense to go, nah, this might not be a real good idea for you to do this. We might want to think of some other way. Besides the fact that Barack Obama is your foreign policy mate on tweeting? Now, I understand hashtags, and I love Twitter, but let me tell you, there was some lack of common sense in the people around them when that was picture was taken in the first place.
Yeah, the switch is on, but the lights are off, as my dad used
right.
to say over there. It just is weird that they, I mean, talk about setting you. That's like a T-ball, you know, say throwing a big fat softball over the plate. No, that's a T-ball waiting for the internet just to blast off.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? Anyway, back
I
to
I would highly advise any candidate that I was working with, that I was helping, no, do not do that. Do not put a sign up there that somebody can erase and put anything on and share it around the internet. I would say no, 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 bad idea, bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, back to Choice and Ground Chuck. They're just going to ruin the internet. They're just going to ruin it. And like you say, they're just doing it to muzzle free speech. They're just going to rip up that Constitution, and it's just terrible. What was the original conversation here? Because I had, before I went off on that crazy my balls itch tangent, I actually had something to add to this. What was the original thing we were talking about?
The original thing we were talking about was what the FCC is wanting to do.
Before that.
I don't remember.
Was it the it was like about debates or something. We're talking about debating. Oh, I know it was. We got to this 2012 debate, and what really, really upset me, Scott, more than anything, was that Mitt Romney should have absolutely leveled this Barack Obama in that debate. And Barack Obama had to answer for this Benghazi thing because it happened. They went with this stupid, they scrubbed out the terrorist thing and they inserted the videotape thing, the YouTube videotape thing, which was a gigantic lie. And they wanted to keep it, like Barack Obama had Al-Qaeda on the run. No, it wasn't terrorism. Everything's great. It was a stupid YouTube video, Of course it wasn't terrorism. We've killed all the terrorists. It was a YouTube video. What we need to do is kill all the YouTube users. That's what we need to get rid of. There's the enemy, like you say. They're trying to set us up as the enemy. And they're going with that narrative. And, man, all Mitt Romney had to do was point that out, that it was complete BS. And he had him beat because everybody knew that by that time the YouTube video narrative was a bunch of crap. And then Barack Obama said, hey, I said it was terrorism. I said it was terrorism. And Mitt Romney was like, what, you lie? You never said it was terrorism. And he and Barack Obama said, Candy, get the transcript.
That's right.
Now, Candy
he
Crowley
knew she had
was
it.
The moderator. Candy Crowley
was
the moderator. Holly or Candy Crowley, whatever, however you say it. Candy Crowley, which I think we can safely say is the entire rump roast. I almost said the entire cow. That would have been too cruel. But she was the moderator of this debate. She did not say anything to Mitt Romney. She had not said anything to Barack Obama. Yet, when Mitt Romney defied Barack Obama, when he questioned Barack Obama about, you never said it was terrorism. Barack Obama said, get the transcript, Candy. And I went, what? And Candy Crowley, right on cue, Scott, pulled out a transcript of something he said in a Rose Garden ceremony that had nothing to do with Benghazi. It had nothing to do with this videotape. It had nothing to do with calling the perpetrators of the 9/11 attack on the ambassador and on the embassy, calling that a terrorist attack. But it was a speech he had given like 4 days later where he mentioned the Benghazi attacks, and then a sentence later, he mentioned fighting terrorism around the world. And she pulled that transcript out, and she linked those two sentences together for Barack Obama. Candy Crowley did that. And I'm sitting there going, wow, they planned this out beforehand.
Sure did. It was a setup.
They were ready. They knew he was vulnerable on this point. They knew it was a huge deal breaker. They knew it was a plot point in the debate. They knew Romney was going to be ready. They knew it was a knockout punch. And they worked it out. They got together. They planned it out. And they provided Candy Crowley with a script. With a with a G-damn transcript of how they would pull it off.
And what makes me mad, Rodney, is if that had been you on that stage, if that had been me on that stage, we would have caught that, turned around, and immediately thrown it back in his face. Wait a minute. This is not right. You mean to tell me she already had this? Ladies and gentlemen of America, the President of the United States just cheated. We need to figure this out. I would have made a big stink out of it. What did Mitt Romney do?
Nothing.
That's what made me mad about Mitt Romney. I liked Mitt Romney as a person. I think he's a great man. I think he's an awesome dad, an awesome family man. As a fighter, he was worthless.
I would have grabbed that transcript out of her hand, and I would have said, Candy Crowley, where did you get this?
That's right.
And how did the president know that you had it?
That's right.
I want an answer. I want it. This debate is on hold. These proceedings will not continue until you disclose to the American public right this second how the President of the United States knew to tell you to pull this out.
Right
now, not after commercial, not you. I'm not giving you a minute to think about it. You are going to tell me right now how Barack Obama knew you had this transcript. He just told you to pull this out. What the hell is going on here?
And why did the American people get conned with that? You know, you watch that clip, and you watch Barack Obama's face. He doesn't have a poker face. You could tell by the look on his face what was going on.
He was so ready for that moment that he
was ready.
Scott, he panicked. He jumped the gun. He was so ready. He jumped the gun. He screwed up. Can he get the transcript? He jumped. And listen, if Mitt Romney would have done what I just articulated, what I would have done,
it would have been all over.
We would have President Romney right now.
We sure would. In a heartbeat. No doubt.
There is not a journalist, there is not a liberal reporter or newspaper of record that could not have done an investigation.
Right.
Nobody could. I mean, they would have, what could they have done, Scott? They would have had, both of them would have had to sit there white-faced and mumbled like Ralph Cramden. What could they have possibly said?
Well, and the other one was, you know, Barack Obama brought up Common Core. And Mitt Romney knew what Common Core was. And Mitt Romney could have laid Common Core out right then and there. We didn't find out about Common Core until 3 or 4 months later after the inauguration, the second inauguration. It was March of last year before really people started figuring out what Common Core was. Mitt Romney knew, and Barack Obama brought it up in a debate, And if Mitt Romney, I would imagine Mitt Romney's probably like Huckabee and Jeb Bush. He's for Common Core. He could have slammed it out of the – he could have – all he had to do was say, do you realize that the President of the United States wants to nationalize your education system? Do it. We could have a President Romney right now. It was not out of reach.
Well, I think even bigger than that, you would have seen a guilty President Obama and a guilty Candy Crowley.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Both of them looking at the ground, desperately thinking of what they might say. And waiting for the other one to talk. And you would have seen a CNN go to commercial. And
that's
you would
right.
have seen a lot. I mean, there would have been what could the most of liberal mainstream press, how could they possibly cover for that? And you would have had that's all anyone would have talked about for months. I mean, you
That's
come
right.
back from commercial, if it's Rodney Lee Conover, you come back from commercial and they start talking, and I would go, no. There's no, whoa. I said these proceedings have stopped, and I mean it. These proceedings,
That's
have
right.
I would walk in between the camera and who's ever on that camera. No. We are back. To the question at hand, I repeat, Candy, where did you get that transcript? Who did you get it from? And why did President Obama ask you to bring it out? How did he know you had it? Did
Right.
you figure out? Did you huddle up and figure it out during the commercial? I mean, I would have held it up all night.
Right. Well, and Romney, okay, let's say Mitt Romney's not quick enough on the draw. Why didn't he come out and ask that the next day? The next day.
Why didn't
The day after
why
that.
Anybody?
Why hasn't Mitt
anybody?
Romney ever brought this up? He
why
needs to get on
Mitt
the
Romney?
He needs to get on the horn now. He could still get on the horn now and make a big deal out of this if he wanted to make a big deal out of it. He never has.
Why didn't the Mitt Romney camp do something as simple as, you know, the fix is in. The fix is in. Who's running this? Don King?
That's right.
Who's promoting,
what a campaign commercial.
You know, who's promoting these debates? You know, Al Capone? Or, you know, figure out somebody who's famous for fixing a fight or something. Don King's a bad example because he's a Republican. But, you know, some... You know, to me, that was a no-brainer.
You'd think.
Right?
That
disturbed me. That disturbed me more than anything about that election. And that was an election that had a lot of disturbing elements to it. Now, I was with Ann Coulter. I'm trying to remember what we were doing. It was before the... It was before the debates. It was before the elections. It was even before the Republicans were just running against the Republicans. What do you call that? My memory is shot.
Primaries?
It was before the primaries. I'd say it was about 2 months before the primaries started. So I think you're talking about January of 2012, just after the new year. I think we were doing, we were skiing or something, and we're talking about how the Republicans the Republican field is rounding out, and I was talking about Herman Cain, of course, and Ann likes Herman Cain, and we both thought Rick Perry was kind of a clown. Sorry, Texas. and she said, and we both came to a conclusion, but she said, you know, in private, and she also said in public, I think she said it on Hannity, long, now this is long before the primaries even got started, Scott, she said, Mitt Romney is going to win the primary and lose to Barack Obama. And that's what happened. I mean, it's not, you know,
that's right.
I mean, it's not Nostradamus-like, but at the time, she was the only one saying that. I mean, Barack Obama, let's face it, did you think he was going to get reelected? Did anybody?
No.
The Democrats didn't even think he was going to get reelected. You know, I mean, they were talking about dropping Joe Biden and, you know, getting a better vice presidential. They were talking, you know, they were coming up with all kinds of, you know, let Hillary be vice president. That'll help him for the reelection. There was all kinds of stuff because he was not going to get reelected. And then, of course, the Republican establishment picked the one guy that he could beat. Why? Because Mitt Romney neutralized the whole Obamacare sledgehammer because he had Romney here. It neutralized the big issue. Am I right?
You're right.
In 2000,
and he had no fight in him.
Well, in 2010, look what happened. The Tea Party was born. A true grassroots movement was born. Why? Because of Obamacare. Obamacare was bribed and cajoled and forced down the Americans' throat against their will. It was borderline. I mean, it was just short of illegal what they did, without a single Republican vote, and just it was just chicanery with all kinds of manipulation of the political process and the voting process and the way it was done, and you know, it was deemed to have passed the House of Representatives, and it was just highly unpopular, and it caused a groundswell of true grassroots movement suddenly called the Tea Party, and it caused the biggest shift in political power practically in the nation's history, and it occurred in 2010, and Republicans got the majority in the House of Representatives back, much to the complete shock of the Democrat Party. I mean, they were shocked. They were laughing about the Tea Party. They were calling it, remember this, Scott? They called it AstroTurf. It's not real.
Oh, yeah.
That's the Koch brothers. They didn't even think it was real. They said it was fake. It was anything but fake, they found out, when the Republicans took back the House, and they almost took back the Senate if it wasn't for a couple of goofy, you know, candidates. I mean, yeah, okay. It's practically, not practically, it's a brand new movement, completely grassroots, completely unorganized. I mean, just completely unorganized. And, yeah, they threw up some candidates. They hadn't been vetted. Tea Party didn't know how to organize. They're not organized. They're not organized at all. So, yeah, they had some candidates that didn't work out in the Senate, and so they didn't take back the Senate, but they did take back the House. Why? Because of Obamacare, primarily, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it was the motivating factor, big time.
Yeah. So here comes 2012. What did the establishment Republicans do? They picked the one candidate that couldn't take advantage of Obamacare.
Yep.
How freaking stupid can you get? How stupid was that? That was stupid. That was monumentally stupid. And now I read that the House Majority Leader, which is different than the Speaker of the House, I always get confused by that crap, by the way. The House Majority Leader, which is not the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, the House Majority Leader is Eric Cantor, which, by the way, If you ever see this guy, Eric Cantor, you just look at him and you go, wait a minute, you're the House Majority Leader? I don't know. Call me old-fashioned, Scott, but I just don't get that, you know, I don't get that George S. Patton moment when I see Garrett Cantor. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
When I see a real leap, I expect a guy to instill a feeling in me where I want to follow. The word follow has to come into play when you say the word leader. You know what I mean? The word follow is a complementary word to the word leader. Leader, follow. I wouldn't follow Eric Cantor into a bathroom if I had to pee. Do you know what I'm saying? I just would. And Eric Cantor now wants to rebrand the GOP. And you know why he wants to rebrand the GOP, Scott? I'll tell you. Because they got beat in the 2012 election. They lost some seats in the House and the Senate. So he believes the GOP needs to be rebranded. No, Eric, it doesn't need to be rebranded. You need to leave. That's what needs to happen.
Right.
It doesn't need to be rebranded. Allow Eric Cantor. Go ahead.
They need to go back to their basic principles, and they'd be fine.
Yeah.
All I got to do is go back to basic principles. That's all they got to do.
Well, listen, roughly half of the American public is thrilled that Eric Cantor wants to rebrand the Republican Party. Roughly half the American public is thrilled about it. Those people are called Democrats, by the way. Because allowing Eric Cantor to rebrand the Republican Party, it's like letting the BLM rebrand the Clive and Bundy's cattle. You know what I'm saying, Scott? This is the guy,
yes.
Eric Cantor. Let me just give you some. Can I give you some Eric Cantor quotes? Can I do quotes here on this show? I know we're allowed to cry. There's a lot of crying, apparently. But can I do quotes?
Okay. If you must.
There's,
let's hear him.
You know when Tom Hanks said there's no crying in baseball?
There's no crying in baseball.
Well, pretend he's here and he's now in charge of Blog Talk Radio, okay? Here's some quotes from the House Majority Leader, and I just did the air quotes with my fingers, Eric Cantor. All right? A few quotes regarding his vision. He just gave this speech just the other day about his new and improved Republican Party. And I got to give you some Captain Obvious with the interpretation of his quotes. I have to interpret his quotes, if it's okay with you. On immigration reform, Eric Cantor says, we must balance respect for the rule of law and respect for those waiting to enter this country legally with care for people and families, most of whom just want to make a better life and contribute to America. This is the leader of our party saying this. We must balance respect for the rule of law with people, most of whom just want to make a better life. Do you hear that? We don't have to balance respect for the rule of law with anything. There's no balance to the respect for the rule of law. You don't need balance to that. That stands on its own, firm, no balancing needed. What a dope. Do you know the interpretation of that is? Here comes amnesty. That's the that's Captain Obvious. For here comes amnesty.
Right.
Okay, on tax policy, Eric Cantor says, taxpayers shouldn't need a worksheet to know how many dependents you have. Can you believe this guy?
Yeah,
taxpayers
I can, because I've watched a long time.
In other words, expect some more shenanigans like the last budget they had where they raised fees, F-E-E-S, fees. They raised fees. Scott, instead of raising taxes, they raised fees. That's so Republican congressmen can go back and lie to their constituents about not raising taxes. No, we didn't raise taxes. We raised fees. You know, that Paul Ryan, that was a real moment for him. When he said, oh, this the budget doesn't, you know, the Ryan, what was that, the Ryan Murray budget doesn't raise taxes.
Right.
Remember that? Well, wait a
minute.
Look at all these things that are going. Oh, those are fees. I got to tell you, that was another, don't get me started. Okay. On leadership, here's Eric Cantor. The Republicans have put together serious, detailed counterproposals when we have objected to this administration's agenda. Do you hear that, Scott? Counterproposals. He's talking about leadership, and he says the phrase counterproposal. Oh, there's some leadership. Counterproposal. How about a few proposals, Mr. Leader?
Right.
In other words, I picture Eric Cantor standing in a bathroom with his other pals in the GOP leadership with their smartphones and saying things like, do you think Obama's mad at me? Did he text back? Check again. Did he text back yet? That's what I see these guys doing. On health care, Eric Cantor, we have a plan that creates universal access programs at the state level, which allows folks to access insurance if they're denied by their insurer. That's his answer to health care. You know, here's their interpretation, Scott. If we can just keep Obamacare around long enough, we can win some more elections. That's what that means.
Right.
They have no desire, Scott, to get rid of Obamacare. None.
Oh, of course not.
They love Obamacare. Have we already talked about that?
Not on the show.
Do you want to indulge me?
You just go ahead, Ryan. You run with that one.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Scott,
okay, I'm better.
Republicans love Obamacare. They love Obamacare. Why? Because Americans are suffering? Because people are losing their health insurance by the millions? Because cancer patients are literally dying? Literally dying, Scott. The bodies are literally piling up because of Obamacare. People are dead because of Obamacare, yet Republicans love it. Why? Why? Because Republicans are a bunch of pussies. And they don't know how to lead. They don't know how to just lead people to the promised land. They have to have something like Obamacare to run on. They're using Obamacare as a hammer to run Democrats. They need Obamacare to win elections. Even if they're running against somebody that has nothing to do with Obamacare, i.e. they had a special election in Florida recently, they were running against this Democrat in Florida. She wasn't even around when Obamacare was passed. She wasn't even for Obamacare. She has nothing to do with Obamacare. She was against Obamacare. But they still used Obamacare to hammer her with, and they beat the piss out of her with it. Republicans love Obamacare. It's the greatest political tool since Watergate. My God, they love it. They're not going to get rid of it. They're going to ride Obamacare back into power, and let me tell you, Scott, they're going to keep it around as long as humanly possible. The American public be damned. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Sorry about that outburst, my friend.
Well, it's true.
Where were we?
I mean, it's true, because they have had plenty of opportunities. The Republicans could have gotten rid of Obamacare. They could have gotten rid of it quite a few number of times. And
right
they
away?
Didn't do it.
As soon as they got
In fact, there was no reason why it should have passed in the first place. They didn't have to lose that battle. They could have won that battle.
Yeah. Even after 2010, February of 2010, they could have voted to fund the entire government. Let's fund the entire government except Obamacare. We're defunding just Obamacare. They have that authority under the Constitution.
That's right.
And they didn't do it. Because they love Obamacare. It is a proven winner. Oh, I hate those Republicans. I really do, Scott.
Well, I know, and it's not the party. It's the people that we've got in there right now. It's the Eric Bain, it's the Eric Cantors, it's the John Boehners. I almost said something. Bob the Cork Dorks. It's Bob Corker. It's the Lamar Alexanders. It's these guys that are up there right now that we could get rid of. And you know what? We really come close. You know, J.D. Winteregg put a pretty good hefty dent in John Boehner. We've just got to keep waking people up. We've got to wake these people up. And you and I talk about this a lot. If we had more people woke up, only 2% of the population voted in that primary in Tennessee that we just had recently. That not enough people are out there. Not enough people are woke up. When we get enough people woke up, when we get the people in the churches woke up, when we get the people out on the streets woke up, and they start actually going out and voting, we can change this. Because it's still, folks, I have not in 30 years of watching polls ever seen when they pull the poll out that says, where do you rate yourself, conservative, liberal, or moderate? I have never seen a poll that wasn't approximately 60+% of the American people consider themselves to be conservative, and 10-12% of the people consider themselves to be far left, and the rest consider themselves to be basically moderate. That's where the people are at, but there's not enough of them voting, and the Democrats have been really, really good at getting the people woke up, at networking. Of course, we got a community organizer in the White House. They've got the head of the grassroots in the White House. That's what we needed to do. We needed to have Herman Cain in the White House. We would have had the head of the grassroots. Because can you imagine if Newt Gingrich had been on that debate floor, or Herman Cain had been on that debate floor with the President of the United States? It would have been all over.
Oh, yeah. It would have been. And, well, they especially knew it with Herman Cain. They knew that they not only could they not afford to ever have Herman Cain square off against Barack Obama, but they had to get Herman Cain out of there before Herman Cain even started swaying 1% of the black vote. They need to get him out of there before any of the black vote started getting swayed. Because let me tell you something, they depend on that 90% of the black vote for the Democrat Party. If Republicans were to get 15% of the black, they've already got 10%. If they were to sway just 15% of the black vote, Democrats would never win another election. And Democrats know that. They cannot afford to lose that voting block. So, you know, Ben Carson, you know, got audited. And of course they're coming after him. I don't know. I really don't know enough about Ben Carson to know if he's a serious candidate for president. You know, you see all these, you know, Ben Carson for president, draft Ben Carson, blah, blah. But you see that a lot about a lot of people. Now, today I saw an article about Ben Carson where he himself was talking about running for president. Now, that's different.
Right.
That's different. Maybe he does have, you know, aspirations like that. I don't know. So he's going to get the same treatment that Herman Cain got, for sure, because this guy is not, you know, he and Herman Cain have obviously very different styles. Dr. Carson is very soft-spoken. Dr. Carson has very, very different views, quite frankly, on a lot of things. Dr. Carson is not going to rile the hardcore conservatives like Herman Cain did. Now, I'm not saying that's good or bad for total vote count, but Dr. Carson does not have a Second Amendment record that Herman Cain does. He does not have a, you know what I'm saying? He
right.
You know, apparently on some of the issues, he's not as conservative as Herman Cain. So they're very different candidates. Obviously, what they do have in common is they are conservative blacks. So they have the main thing that they have in common, a threat to that Democrat stronghold, that monolithic black vote.
Now, and see, Rodney, this is where the hot dogs come in. This is where the hot dogs come in. I wish I had $1 million. I would buy, what? I would take, and I'd go down to the ghetto of Detroit. I'd go to the ghetto of Chicago, the ghetto of Los Angeles, the ghetto of New York. I'd go down there, and I'd start throwing them hot dogs all over the place, get those people into some big venues, and let Herman Cain go at them, let Kay Carl go at them, let Dr. Ben Carson go at them, let some of these people go at them that can sit there and explain to them and say, listen, wake up. You guys have been voting with the wrong party all this time. This is their record. This is what they've been doing. This is what you believe. This is what the Republican Party is. And believe me, I'm a Republican. They're not a bunch of racists, as you've been told. You've been lied to. I guarantee you, Rodney, if I had $1 million worth of hot dogs, I could sway some votes.
I know you could. You know, what I don't get, Scott, last year, I think, what was it, November? Last November, when I was in Palm Beach at Restoration Weekend, it was such a great thing to speak before Ted Cruz, and such a big deal for me. But I was in the audience when Ben Carson was speaking, and it's the first time I've seen him speak. And, you know, I've seen him on television, but it's the first time I've seen him in person. And, you know, what a big difference it is watching someone in person versus watching them on television. It's a big difference.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's night and day. And I'm sitting there watching him, and all I could think of was what a waste of time it was, because everybody at Restoration Weekend, I mean, it is a who's who of conservatives. It was me and Ann and it was me and Ann, Colonel Alan West, Ted Cruz, three or four people, you don't know who they are, but they're big time political conservative right wingers. Who's the Hegel Forum, Phyllis Schlafly, you know, just the, and I'm not putting myself in that group, I'm just saying I just happen to be there, but I'm just trying to give you an idea that it is truly preaching to the choir. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean,
oh, definitely.
Monica Crowley spoke before me. I mean, it's just totally preaching. Greg Gutfeld, just everybody just preaching
John Voight.
To the choir. What?
John Voight.
No,
John Voight.
He's not. No, he's not even right-wing enough. We're talking about the real pundits, the real conservative thinkers and writers and speakers and Fox News and, you know, just, golly, the guy that puts it on is the guy, you know who it is. Anyway, I'm bad with names. But what I'm trying to say is I'm just sitting there in the audience and I'm looking around and it's every right-winger you've ever seen on television or read their books. And I'm just thinking, God, what a waste of time this is. You know, just everybody, we all know who each other's voting for, you know. What are we doing, you know? Why aren't we each putting $25,000 up and buying hot dogs, you know? Pardon me for a second for being crude, okay? But we're all here just jacking each other off, you know? That's all we're doing. It's just a waste of time. We're just here just smiling and saying, oh, look at us. We're all just conservatives, you know? That's just a big waste of time. We should be pooling our resources and buying hot dogs and actually affecting some change.
That's right.
And we should. And I'm just wondering, you know, everybody's got such a, and I, you know what, and I include myself there. I was there. I'm not saying I'm better than anybody else. I'm not. I was there, too. I was indulging just like everybody else. And I wanted my ego stroked. I wanted all my, you know, I don't consider those people my peers. I was the least famous person there by far. But I was accepted into the group, and, you know, Phyllis Schlafly was, you know, invited me to her place for fundraiser. You know, I made some inroads, and Ted Cruz shook my hand and, you know, thanked me. You know, some good stuff happened, and I got my ego stroked, Scott, so I'm guilty. I didn't buy any hot dogs. But I just wonder, you know, do you got to have $1 million? Can we, you know, can we do it on a smaller basis, you know? But then you can't get the big guys to show up, and it's just a, I don't know.
I know it. And, you know, that's what I said when I was at Corsicana when I was up on stage. You know, and I compared it to church because it's the same way. You know, you and what you went to there in Hollywood would be comparable to a church service. We go to church services on Sunday to recharge our batteries so that we can go out and be good Christians during the week, so that we can be the salt of the earth during the week, so that we can make change during the week. That's what a Tea Party rally is all about. You get together there, you know, you're not convincing anybody at the Tea Party rally. You're not bringing Democrats in so they can sit and listen and change their mind. You are motivating yourself so that you can go out into the world and wake people up. Take people that have been voting Democrat and explain to them that what they've been voting for and what they've been getting is two different things. They're not the same. They've been being lied to. What you went to, that meeting with all those people there doesn't do any good whatsoever for anything except for motivation, and that motivation is lost if all those people don't go out the next week and find some votes, change some hearts and minds. And, you know, and we've been playing this game over and over and over again. That was why I loved, that's why I absolutely loved working with Herman Cain.
Yeah.
I loved that campaign. I loved what we were doing with the grassroots because we were changing minds and hearts. We were taking things that Herman Cain was able to say it in a way that people liked him, they liked what he said, and they understood it, and it made sense. And we could take and we could show a video to somebody and say, listen, look at this guy. And they'd go, oh, wait, yeah, I like that. I really, really like that. We were out to be able to go out and change minds and hearts. And let me tell you, about at least half of the people that were working on Team Cain, the volunteers, the grassroots organization behind Herman Cain, had never been politically active before in their lives. They were just like me. They'd voted. When they were sat down in a political discussion, they held their own. They were able to talk, and maybe they got into articles on the internet, and they shared information. But to get in and support a candidate, to actually support a candidate, they'd never done it until Herman Cain. And most of those people that worked with Herman Cain that were in that boat are still active today. He started something. He encouraged people to get out and make a difference, and they still are. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to Team Cain the grassroots into going out and waking people up and changing minds and hearts. If we'll do that, if every single person would just go out and find one person, we could double our votes. But we got to do it. Back to you. There's my rant.
No, I love listening to you because you're right on. You're absolutely right on. Did I tell you about this guy that I met, this World War II vet that I met in the Costco parking lot that can't get his Purple Heart?
No, you didn't tell me that yet.
Oh, I'm surprised. The other night, I met a guy when I was campaigning, actually, and I met a guy in a Costco parking lot. I was out there, and you know, I try to become more Scott Osborne like in my life, and so I go over to the bad parts of town and near Victorville, and I try to meet people and I try to talk to people, and I know they're going to be Democrats, and I know they're, you know, it's mostly a black part of town. And I don't know how else to say it. That's what it is. Some Hispanic, mostly black. And yeah, I met this guy, and he's very elderly gentleman, and it turns out he's like 92. And he's with this woman, and it turns out it's his granddaughter, but she's, you know, my age. And got to talking to him, and he's a lifelong Democrat, wasn't really interested in talking to me. And I said, listen, I don't care about Democrat, Republican. I'm not just saying that. I really don't care. I said, you know, I'm interested in finding some common ground. And I know, you know, and you start talking about World War II. He's a World War II vet. I said, well, right away, you're a veteran, and I was in the USO. So, you know, we have common ground. And I'm a big supporter of the Second Amendment, and I'm a big supporter of the military. My nephew's in Afghanistan. So here we go. We got common ground. Let's talk about that. I bet we agree on everything, so we don't got to worry about Democrat, Republican. We started talking about World War II, and I told him about my experiences with two or three other veterans, World War II veterans, because there's not many of them left. And he starts telling me, Scott, that he got received a Purple Heart. He got a Purple Heart. He was wounded in battle.
Oh, wow.
I said, well, when was this? You know, tell me what happened. And I don't remember exactly what happened, but he was in the Pacific. I can't remember now, but I think it was like the Philippines or something. And he was wounded, and there was some sort of incident where black guys, because of their rapes, they weren't actually receiving the physical medal. They weren't getting their Purple Hearts. And it was just happening to black guys. It wasn't happening to white guys. And it was, you know, at least he was telling me, it was kind of a common thing. You'd get issued a white a Purple Heart, but you'd never actually receive it. And
right.
at the time, now, when you think about the late 40s, well, you know, these guys running around screaming about racism now, forget about it. Late 40s, these
guys...
Oh,
yeah, it was real racist.
Yeah, these guys were experiencing actual racism, not the kind that these chumps run around now talking about, you know, some owner of the Clippers bitching to his whore, you know, about Magic Johnson. Not that kind
right.
of racism. I'm talking about actual racism in the late 40s. You can bet your ass that in World War II, this guy was experiencing some hardcore, real racism back before, you know, he was even allowed to vote, back before he was allowed to sit in front of the bus, could walk up to him sitting on a bus and say, get up, I want your seat. Back before
right.
he was had the privileges of using the same water fountain as white people. If somebody wanted his apartment, he could be thrown out of his apartment so a white family could have it. We're talking about real racism, where people's lives were in danger if they walked into the wrong part of town, you know?
Exactly.
Just, you know, a disgusting, you know, chapter in our history, but there it is. And
you know what? And they handled it different back then too. They, you know what? The majority of them said, you know what? We've got this is the way life is, and they taught their kids it's not right, but you got to do the best with what you got. And it wasn't fair. It was not fair. It was horrendous the way many of them were treated. But now we've got a day and an age, and there's still racism out there. We know that. I'd say the majority of it is in the Democratic Party. I say the majority of it's in the Southern Democrats. But their mentality today is blame everybody for all of your problems. You got your Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharptons running around doing more damage to the black community through the blame game instead of the jumping hurdles and getting stronger and do your best and make everything you can do. it was a horrendous time in our history, and it makes me angry, Rodney, when they throw the word racist around and try and call me a racist because I disagree with our president because he happens to be black. I disagreed with the last one they had, and he happened to be white. It doesn't matter. But they demean what really happened. And it was the horrific actions that happened to the black community in this country over a couple hundred years during slavery, as well as some things in past decades.
Absolutely. So after about an hour talking to this guy, I said, "Well, you know, whatever happened with your Purple Heart?" And he said, "Well, back then, it was no big deal because, you know, it was kind of common knowledge that, you know, you weren't going to get your medal because you're black. No, none of the black guys were getting their medals, be it for valor or Purple Heart or whatever. So that's just the way it is." He said, but years later, he thought, you know what, fuck them. Or, excuse me, I'm sorry, Scott, but that's what he said. He said, I sure would like to get my Purple Heart. And he tried to get his Purple Heart, and he actually got proof that he was awarded a Purple Heart. And I didn't really get into it on the details of what that proof was, but he claims that he had the proof, some sort of written proof, that he had been awarded a Purple Heart. And I said, well, that's crazy. You should be able to get how hard can it be to get this guy his Purple Heart? He's not asking for a $5,500 motorized wheelchair, which, by the way, I could get him one if he wanted a wheelchair. I'm pretty sure I could make that happen. But it's a Purple Heart. Let's go. Let's get it. And so I took down the guy's name and his number, and, you know, I had a nice chat with him, and I said, listen, I'm still a Republican. You know, back when the guys with the hoods and the separate but equal and Jim Crow, those guys were all Democrats, my man. And so let's not, you know, I'm turning back into Republican here on you because I would be remiss if I didn't point out that you're voting for the wrong guys, and you have been your whole damn life, and I'm not going to let you off the hook for it. So I said, if I get you your Purple Heart, you're gonna start voting Republican? And he said, hell yes. So I tell you, Scott, I'm on a mission. I'm going to get this guy his Purple Heart. And not just because he'll start voting Republican. Well, yeah, that's not true. Well, partly because I want this guy to start voting Republican, and partly because this guy should be getting his Purple Heart, don't you think? Did I lose you? I think I may have.
Sorry, I was on mute. I was talking away, Rodney. Exactly. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It's the exact the right thing to do. And you know what? Most liberals wouldn't care about it. They wouldn't have taken the time, worried about it. They wouldn't have cared about it.
Do you remember the time that I found the vet that couldn't get a wheelchair from the congressman?
I sure do. I remember it well. You got him that wheelchair.
Well, yeah, the first thing I thought of was, you know what? His name's Bruce Cotton. The first thing I thought of was, you know what? I'm going to call Bruce Cotton because after I got Bruce's wheelchair, the congressman, everybody was so embarrassed by what I had done. And, Scott, you know I wasn't trying to embarrass people. Well, maybe I was a little bit. But I wasn't trying to embarrass the VA. I wasn't trying to embarrass people at the VA. I was only trying to embarrass one person, and that was the guy at the top. I wasn't trying to embarrass the people around. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wasn't.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
People got so embarrassed. You know what happened? Bruce Cotton ended up with three wheelchairs. I mean, they started delivering him wheelchairs. That guy's lousy with wheelchairs now. Anyway, I think he applied for 80% disability. They gave him 100%.
Oh.
And, yeah, so I called him up, and I said, hey, Bruce, what has happened to you? You know, I mean, I kind of kept in touch with him, but I hadn't called him in like a month and a half. I called him up, and I said, hey, Bruce, what's happened in the last 6 weeks? Give me a Bruce Cotton update. And he said, oh, my God, Rodney, they delivered another wheelchair. I can't stop them. So what do you, I go, what are you doing with the wheel? He goes, I hope you're not upset, Rodney, but I kept one of the new wheelchairs, and I gave the one that you gave me, I gave it to my brother-in-law because he had his foot amputated. I said, is he a veteran? He goes, yeah. And I go, okay, good. I mean, I said, Bruce, I'm sorry for laughing about your brother-in-law, but I said, how many wheelchairs you got now? He goes, I just have two now. And I said, well, what are you going to do? He goes, I'm going to keep them both in case one of them breaks.
There you go. And you know what? That was something that should have never happened, Rodney. Because what happened there was somebody made a promise that they weren't planning on keeping.
Yes,
and you
I
had
know.
To come in.
And for no money. It didn't cost me any money. It didn't cost him any money. They were donated a beautiful, probably $5,000 motorized vehicle. And it wasn't a little one. It wasn't like one of those little rascals. It was a giant one. This guy's big. This guy weighs probably three biscuits, you know. It was a giant, you know, luxury motor, a heavy duty. I mean, this thing is four-wheel drive, literally. It can go through sand. Anyway, I said, well, what else has happened? He said, well, you know, I went in for testing. They made a big deal out of it. And, you know, they declared me 80% disabled. I said, okay, well, how do you feel? He goes, well, you know. And instead of giving him 80% disability, they gave him 100% because I guess they didn't want me bitching or something. I don't know. So it all turned out well for Bruce. I said, listen, Bruce, I said, do you know these people on a first name basis? Now, you getting along with them? He goes, oh, yeah, they call me all the time. And I said, well, I got a situation down here. I'm trying to get this old black dude, World War II vet. I got to get him his Purple Heart because, you know, I think it'll embarrass the congressman. And, you know, that's kind of my thing now. And he goes, you know what? I think I know who to call. And so this guy gives me
right on.
He gives me a lead to this woman in Florida who helps people get their medals. So already I got a really good lead, and I got to go out to Florida to my mom is having some trouble down there, and it's right near where this lady is, the government lady that deals with the medals. So guess what, Scott? I see a Purple Heart in my near future, and a sitting congressman who I'm going to heckle into tears. And can you see the newspaper article now? Conover gets lifelong Democrat his Purple Heart in the district.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. Well, the story has come full circle because you realize this was the first story you ever told me when we first met. This was what was going on, Mr. Cotton and the wheelchair. You had just that day had been up there, and I remember you telling me about him getting in that thing and dancing and literally dancing in that wheelchair. He was so ecstatic. And he had worked so hard and tried and done everything he could by the book in order to try and get that wheelchair, and he couldn't get that wheelchair, and you came in and did it. So now we've come around that full circle. Now we'll follow the story of the Purple Heart. And
yeah.
I think it's great.
And you know what? I really took it easy on, you know, once that, because it happened really quickly and easily. I really took it easy on the congressman. I really did. I didn't put it in his face at all. I just let it happen. I just figured, hey, you know what? This is it. And I let the newspaper guy, you know, write the story and whatever. I didn't throw it in his face at all, and I because I didn't feel like it. I didn't feel like, because that's not why I did it. It really isn't, Scott, because if that was my motivation, I would have thrown it in his face, and I didn't. But I'll tell you what.
Oh, definitely. Ronnie, go back and kind of tell the beginning of that story. We've got the chat room open, and we got some people in there, and they're asking, was he owed a wheelchair from somebody? But so kind of go back and tell the beginning of the story of how you got involved in that and why he wasn't getting his wheelchair.
Well, I was sent a story about a veteran in Inyo County, which is the county north of here. I'm in San Bernardino County in California, which is the eastern part of Southern California. And it's a city called Lone Pine, and it's up there in Inyo County. And the guy's name is Bruce Cotton, and he's kind of a loner. He lives out in Lone Pine, which is a very small city to begin with. And the congressman, the sitting congressman in this massive district, District 8, his name is Paul Cook, and he's a veteran. His name's, in fact, he was a colonel, Colonel Cook, they call him. And he still puts Colonel Cook on his big signs. They do a lot of signage out here for the primaries and the general elections because the district is so massive. District 8 is the second biggest district in the United States. It got redistricted in 2012. It's huge. It's just massive. I mean, it's big. It's primarily comprised of the Mojave Desert. So there's not, you know, it's very sparsely populated. And so geographically, it's huge. So there's a lot of these huge signs, and apparently you're not supposed to call yourself a colonel once you're retired, but who cares, right? I mean, once a Marine, always a Marine. That's what I say. But it's kind of backfired on him this time. People, as you know, people are not real happy with Colonel Cook. And on a lot of his, I mean, the signs are gigantic. I mean, he's got all this money. You know, he's got millions of dollars, mostly from left-wing labor unions and, you know, George Soros-type connected money. And, you know, let's just call it like it is, Democrat in sheep's clothing, right? And it, so he's got these giant signs everywhere, and they say, Cook. C-O-O-K. Are you with me so far, Scott?
Yes.
So somebody on a lot of the signs has taken a spray can, and on the second O in the name Cook, C-O-O-K, they have painted a little portion of the second O out, so it now spells C-O-C-K. There's all these signs that no longer say Cook. And
oh, no.
I am telling you, it is a riot. And it says Colonel, I can't say it, but go ahead and sign it out. Oh, my God. It is so funny. Anyway, Colonel Cock was he was put in charge. He was put on in leadership positions on several veterans affairs. What would you call them in the government? It just escapes me. He was appointed committees. You know, he's in charge of these veterans affairs committees because he's a retired colonel. So he's in charge of this stuff. Scott. Now,
right.
He's got a and as you know, the Veterans Administration couldn't be more effed up. I mean, beyond this horrific thing they got going on in Phoenix, where they have this secret waiting list that resulted in they basically murdered these veterans in Phoenix by putting them on this secret waiting list. Beyond that, which, of course, people should be in prison for that. Beyond that, they got billions of dollars to fix this backorder thing, and they basically just denied everybody their benefits. The Veterans
right.
Now, I'm not knocking people that actually work at the VA. Those people are great. You know, I've volunteered at VA and I've been down there, you know, worked there as an entertainer for years. My first, USO show was like 1989 or something. So, I know people that work at the VA and I respect them, and I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about DC, you know, administrators, the VA bureaucracy. Listen, folks, if you are curious what health care is going to be like under Obamacare, trot your ass down to the VA hospital and talk to some patients down there, okay? Spend some time at your local VA hospital, or just get online and Google what's going on at the at your friendly Arizona VA hospital, where they literally kill veterans rather than do the paperwork they ought to be doing. Anyway, Colonel Cook, decided that he would make a couple of local appearances, which he doesn't do often in this district. He decided to do a couple appearances, one of them in Needles. I don't know if you've ever been to Needles. I can tell you how you get there. You go north until you smell it, and then you go east till you step in it. That's how you get to Needles. Hoping no one in Needles. Well, there is no one in Needles. They all live in Arizona, and then they walk across the border to work in Needles because there's no tax in Arizona. So he made some ladies' auxiliary there in Needles. And then his other little stop was at a town hall in Lone Pine, or maybe it was in Bishop. And anyway, it was a small, very small appearance in Inyo County where he thought maybe there'd be some friendliness because it was at mainly with veterans. Well, Colonel Cook didn't know Cotton was going to show up with his crutches because he's lost the use of his legs in the Vietnam War. And he's got these crutches. You know the crutches that they don't go under your arms? They just kind of wrap around your arms like Tiny Tim?
Right.
He's got those kind of. It's just really, it's, you know, the only word I can think of is pathetic. And Bruce wouldn't mind me saying this, by the way. And it's really difficult for this guy to get around. And it must have been horrible for him to get into this town hall. Well, Colonel Cook is up there talking. And I guess, I wasn't there, but I guess Bruce just started heckling him mercilessly, put him an asshole, because here, this colonel is in charge of these committees to get some of this stuff done for veterans. Bruce Cotton has been 18 months trying to get a damn wheelchair, and he can't get one. Do you know how easy it is to go to a swap meet and get a wheelchair, Scott? I could get one in an hour. I could have a wheelchair. And the stupid VA can't get this poor veteran, a decorated Vietnam War veteran, they can't get the guy a wheelchair. He's lost the use of his legs. Get the guy a damn wheelchair, you idiots. But no, they don't. Not only that, his congressman is in charge. It's not some flunky. This guy is in charge of the freaking deal. And he promises, hey, I'll look into it. Well, guess what? He doesn't. And the guy of the local paper, the Inyo County Register, he writes the guy up. He says, you know, local veteran Bruce Cotton, da-da-da, writes the whole story up. Congressman ignores him, Scooby-Doo. Well, guess what? Our congressman doesn't give a crap about anything. Or I don't know. Maybe he's feeble. I don't know what's going on with the guy. But somebody emailed me this article. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, what the hell's going on here? Why can't the Congress, well, you know, why can't you pick up the phone and say, hey, I mean, even if you don't give a damn, Scott, let's say you're too busy to deal with one of your constituents. Let's say you're in Washington and you're busy with hookers and blow, and you just don't have time to deal with anything. Just for the fact that you're getting articles like that written about you, wouldn't you pick up the phone and go, hey, we're getting some bad press over here. Get over there. Get the guy a wheelchair. A little, you know, I'm sorry note. Maybe line up a photo op. And you know, take care of this. I got hookers and blow over here to worry about. I'm not, you know. But no, he doesn't do it. Weeks and weeks and weeks go by. And I call up the guy. I call up the reporter. And I say, hey, what's the deal with this Bruce Cotton? Who is he? Did he get his wheelchair? What happened? And the guy goes, yeah, I'm pretty sure nothing happened, but, you know, I can put you in touch with the, I think it was the assemblyman or it was the local, what would you say, the alderman or what else would be the local guy? Whatever he was, councilman or some shit. And I said, okay, and I called him. And he goes, yeah, he goes, Bruce is kind of a recluse, but, you know, they never did get him the wheelchair, and he can't get out of his house now. He's stuck in his house. He can't even get out to the driveway. And, Scott, I was like, God, you're kidding me. This is terrible. And so I'm trying, and nobody knew where, like, they couldn't even tell me where the guy lives. And I said, you got to find this guy. Find him and tell him that I'm going to help him, okay? That's all I want you to do. And I said, is he a big guy? Is he a small guy? You know, and this alderman or whatever he was, he was like, you know, I really don't know. I've never met him. And I said, well, find out where he is because it's a long way away. You know, it's like 5 hours from here. And, you know, it's the middle of winter, and there's a lot of snow up there. It's on Mammoth Lakes. You know, it's up there where all the snow resorts are. I said, find this guy, kind of estimate how much he weighs, and tell him I'm going to help him, and ask him if it's okay if I help him. You know, I don't want to walk up, I don't want to go all the way up there, and the guy pulls out a shotgun. You know what I'm saying? So he calls me back a couple of weeks later, and he goes, "Hey, you know, I found him, big guy, and he wants your help." So, literally, Scott, I made two phone calls, and you know who I called? The first guy I called, our buddy. Chris Bergard. You know Chris, right?
Right. Yeah.
Well, Chris is, you know, connected. He makes a call to a veteran who is lost his legs. I think you would know this guy. He wrote a book. He also was in a video with our buddy Nick Searcy. Remember when Nick Searcy was doing that acting school? And he gets
right.
beaten up by the beaten up by the veteran with no legs. Remember that episode?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he calls up, I can't remember his name, but he's really funny. And he called up the veteran with no legs because he's a spokesman for a wheelchair company by coincidence. He calls him up, says, hey, Rodney has a vet, wants to get hooked up with a wheelchair. He goes, hey, Bob's your uncle, no problem. A day later, I have not one, but two wheelchairs, a small one and a big one. I said, hey, we got you two of them because, you know, we don't know what size the guy is. I go, you know, he's a big guy. So I'm going to, he said, well, we got you these two. Scott, I kept one of them. I got the small one to this day. And so I took the big one. No, it's crazy. I took the big one up there, and that's, I guess, I talked to you right after that. I drove out there, and I gave it to Bruce Cotton, and he rode it around. And a woman, the nicest woman on the face of the earth, Angel. Her name is Emily. She is president of the Inyo County Women's Republican Federated. Emily met me. She met me down in at Bruce Cotton's house. She came down from Bishop, and she took a video of me giving he cried. He's just like a grown man. First he started dancing. And then he cried. And he wrote, I mean, this guy was riding this, he was going like 25 miles an hour. I thought he was going to crash.
And he's not a small guy.
No, he's huge. But that thing was flying.
The veteran with no legs is Iraqi veteran Brian Anderson.
Brian Anderson, yeah. He's really funny. He's the guy that, yeah, and that got the wheelchair. Anyway, that's the story. And so then I called the guy at the Inyo County Register, and, you know, they took pictures, and they wrote a real nice article. And like I said, I didn't stick it in the congressman's face at all. I mean, I don't even know if the congressman ever knew what the outcome was. Honestly, I don't know. But that kind of started my campaign, if you'll remember.
I did. It did. It was the beginning of everything that was going on. And I'll tell you, Rodney, it was one of the things that really caught my attention about you because it was about real life. And you know,
yep.
Here's what gets me about Paul Cook. And I almost called him the other thing. You almost got me all messed up. Here's the thing. Had I been Paul Cook and I'd been sitting there in front of that man, that would have made such an impression on me that I would have, before the night was over, would have taken care of it. It wasn't like, you know, if you and I were, and you did it, you sat down and accomplished the task. If I were going to sit down and accomplish the task, I would know the process to do it. I'd have to start working connections and finding out who can accomplish this task for me. Paul Cook didn't have to do that. He didn't have to go through that process. All he had to do was say, note with his secretary, say, listen, call this person and tell them I need a wheelchair up in Lone Pine tomorrow. And he could have done that. But he obviously didn't care about this constituent, and he doesn't care about his other constituents.
No, all he cared about was getting out of there as fast as he could. It's just amazing. And then he'll take money from a labor union. God, just pathetic.
I know it. Well, we got 20 minutes left, Rodney. Actually, 16 minutes. And let me tell you, we got about six people in the chat room right now listening to your story. Want to give a big shout out to Teresa B, who's listening and has got some people in the chat room with us. But you know, Rodney, this is what we do.
Are any of them asking questions?
they have been. That's why I had you go ahead and repeat that story. But you know, this is what we do each week. And the reason why we do this and the reason why we talk on this show each week is because we want to wake people up. We want to get back to some reality. I look out and I see all these houses behind me, and I think, you know, what percentage of them actually vote and what percentage of them actually know what is going on in the United States. Now, in the chat room, of course, they placed the blame on the wheelchair. They placed it all the way to the top, Barack Obama. Which, the buck stops here. And it does go all the way to the top because the Democrats have been worse than the Republicans have. And even neither side's been good at treating our veterans right. For decades now, we haven't treated our veterans right. But the Democrats just don't care. And it's just insane. So I'll pass it back to you in a couple of few minutes. We'll start leaning on towards what's going on this week on Contending for Truth and to the end of the show.
Well, let me ask you something. You know, what have you been seeing in the news that this week that caught your eye? Anything in particular?
You know, there's been a lot of stuff going on. I'll tell you what's going on here in Texas, and it's really interesting. You know, we got all kinds of fights going on. Texas is crazy, man. I'm going to tell you, everything's bigger in Texas. You know, in most states, you have a primary, and then you have a general election. No, not in Texas. In Texas, we've got a primary, and then you've got a runoff, and then you got a special election. We just got the special election out of the way. We voted on a bunch of bond issues that got voted in, and then you got to turn around and have another special election. I think we've got about 20 elections between now and November. Well, maybe not that many, but we've got some candidates running, and we talk about them on Contending for Truth. We've got Sid Miller and Wayne Christian and Ken Paxton and Dan Patrick and a few others. And for the most part, they're pretty far ahead. And then we've got some other candidates that are running opposed to them in this runoff. And I'm going to tell you, Rodney, these can't ever ship them out there to California. They are acting like imbeciles. We've got a Bob Dole, who's one of our state senators. He's running against Bob Paul. And, you know, he's playing – they're playing by the left's playbook. And I hate that because I came down here to Texas to get away from that nonsense. I left you in charge of California. You can have all that nonsense out there. We've got some of the candidates that are absolutely acting like children. And I'm ready to. You might be having to go down to LAX and pick up about six candidates. I'm just gonna ship them out to California. You can find someplace out there in LA to dump them off.
All right, I'll do it. Well, that's pretty nuts. Now there was a guy, where was it? Nebraska. A Tea Party guy just won, and he had some big. Yeah. He had some big-time endorsements, so he had Ted Cruz coming in.
He did. Mike Lee.
Yeah, he had all the big heavy hitters coming. Now, why did he get the big names coming in to endorse him?
That story made a little bit of news. And, you know, the guy he was running against, his last name was Osborne. And he was the guy, if you remember, back when China got a hold of one of our planes, that guy was supposed to ditch that plane down in the ocean. And he ditched it. He landed it in China. And remember, China had it for a few days, a week, however long it was, before we got it back, and they licked it all over. When this Osborne guy started running, he was ahead. In fact, he was the front runner. This situation, he was supposed to dump this plane instead of landing it in China, came out. He had some flunky up there in D.C. write him some kind of a letter that excused it, made an excuse for it, whatever, but it wasn't official from the Navy, and he played it as official in the Navy, and he dropped to nothing. And he had Lindsey Graham then turn around and endorse, which didn't help him at all. But I think that kind of got it, lifted it up to a little bit more prominence in the primaries going on. But he did, and he surprised surprised the living daylights out of him. They kind of thought he was going to win, but man, it was overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. You know what interests me is, I see a lot of gloating going on with the Republican establishment, how well they did in the primaries. And I want to say to them, well, listen, you know, you're supposed to win those primaries. You're supposed to win most of them. You know, that's why they call them challengers. You know, the person in office with all the money and all the support and everything else, you're supposed to win. And here you are running around gloating as if to say, you know, ha ha, you know, you're not that great. Well, listen, any victory to you know, punch one of these guys out, to get one of these rhinos knocked out of office, is a huge victory because it really accomplishes more than just getting a bad Republican out of office. It shows the rest of them, hey, you better start voting correctly. You better think
twice
about screwing around with your constituency. So it's not just one guy getting booted out of office. It's a domino effect, you know? So
it is. And I'll tell you, it's not just that if they win. They don't even have to win. Now, J.D. Winteregg didn't win against Boehner, but he took a huge chunk of the vote, made Boehner spend a lot of money, and really made an impression. It's a lot better when they do win. But even if they just come and put a huge dent, it gives them a little bit of a scare.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, of course, I don't know. I don't know about Boehner and Cantor. I don't know anymore about these Republicans. I think you got a lot more hope than I do for this Republican Party. I really think that they're doomed. I really do. They're doomed, these Republicans. Who are they? Answer the question, Scott.
I have no hope for the Republican leadership, for one thing. I have plenty of hope for the people. You know, it's just, and I'm going to go back to the church illustration again. It's just like a church. You know, the church and the people are not always what's wrong. A lot of times it's the leadership that's wrong. And the grand old party is still the grand old party. We're what made this country great. Our ideals are what made this country great. The federal government cannot micromanage. Go back to what I love that statement, that the states, the rights of the states and the individual sovereignty and the freedom and the free market system and our appreciation of life and our basic ideals and our basic principles that are Republican, those things made this country great. Right now, we've got a bunch of Republicans that are crap. We've got a bunch of Republicans that are crap, and we've just got to get them out of there. One of these days we need to talk about term limits, because I'd love to see term limits. But I want to tell you, the same, you got to make sure you take care of the lobbying situation before you give term limits, or you got a whole bunch of inexperienced government officials with a whole bunch of experienced lobbyists. So you got to fix that side too. But I have no confidence in the Republican Party right now. However, I've got full confidence in who the Republicans are. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know. I just wonder what has to happen. I just wonder what has to happen before we throw our hands in the air and go, you know what? A new movement is really needed. A new movement is needed. And maybe, you know, people say, oh, you know, we already have a movement. We already have a movement within the Republican Party. But then I hear people, oh, we got to take the Republican Party back. And I'm like, well, you know, how are you going to do that? How are you going to do that when you got Eric Cantor, and it would have been John Boehner, but he got caught, but you got Eric Cantor and you got the Republican leadership meeting, having a retreat with the Main Street Republican Partnership Super PAC in Florida, meeting with these guys, plotting, taking millions of dollars from them. They're funded by left-wing groups, by labor unions, with George Soros-connected money. Our leadership is plotting with these people. And their stated desire, their stated goals, the Steve LaTourette and company, their goals are to destroy Tea Party candidates. I mean, how can you even deal with that? Well, there's nothing to deal there. They have replaced liberals, Democrats, socialists, and Marxists. They have replaced those that used to be the enemy, and they have inserted you and me as the enemy. We are the enemy, according to the Republican leadership. They've put targets on us. When people go crazy and they scream and they run around and they say, why isn't Lois Lerner in prison? She is committed, and she has admitted to, this is self-confessed on Lois Lerner's part, she has committed multiple felony violations of civil rights violations of American citizens. Each of those acts are punishable by 5 years and $250,000. Each act, not the in its entirety, each act. She should be in prison for life. And people are going, why isn't Lois Lerner in prison? Why hasn't anybody been arrested over the IRS thing? And I'll tell you why. She is doing the Republican leadership's dirty work. She is doing battle with the enemy of the Republican Party, and that is you and me. That's
right.
Why Lois Lerner is not in prison.
Exactly.
It's got nothing to do with Eric. It's got nothing to do with Eric Holder. Because I got news for you. And when I say you, I'm talking about the American public, which I guess includes you. Sorry, Scott, I didn't mean to exclude you from that group. I got news for you. The Constitution gives the House of Representatives the authority to arrest or to detain Ms. Lerner.
That's right.
And
well, I'll tell you, Rodney, I know how we'll fix it. We fix it with $1 million worth of hot dogs and a big stadium.
He won't do it.
And
he won't
bring those people in there and teach them. Well, we're up in 3 minutes. We want to talk a couple of minutes about what's coming up next week. We've got Frank Scaturro running for Congress in the 4th District in New York. Good friend Ken Brolin running his campaign. They're doing real well. I'm going to tell you, they're hardworking people. This is one of the hardest working candidates. He won't stop. He's the Energizer Bunny, and he's got a lot of hurdles. This is not an easy race. Sometimes you've got a decent path to victory. Sometimes you just got to claw at it to get there. And so we're looking forward next week. Rodney and I'll be interviewing Frank Scaturro, talking to him about some East Coast politics. We want to remember this coming up Saturday. Of course, tomorrow is Ladies Bible Class. I'll come back to that last. But Saturday is Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson and I at 11 o'clock Texas time. Dan and I talking about a little bit of history, a little bit of politics, a little bit of current events. And then Tuesday nights, we've got American Sovereignty Radio with Dan Wilson again and Jennifer Montrose. We've had some really good shows here the last couple of weeks. And then, of course, tomorrow at 10:30, California time, 12:30 Texas time. The reason why we've got this network, the reason why I opened it in the first place. Ladies Bible Class, I've been teaching that class in California for 5 years. When it got time to move to Texas, we didn't want to give it up. So we opened up a blog talk station. Now, instead of sitting in the living room or sitting at the dining room in California, I sit in the dining room here in Texas, and the ladies sit in the dining room in California. They put the laptop on the desk and on the kitchen table, and we continue to do Ladies Bible Class. We are studying the Old Testament, folks, and I'm going to tell you, it's a great, great study. If you've never read the novel that starts in Genesis and ends in Esther in the Old Testament, it is one of the most fascinating. Hollywood can't do it justice. They've tried. They've pulled a story here and there and tried. But you got to read that whole novel from beginning to end. It is absolutely fascinating. We are in the middle right now of the divided kingdom, and we just threw Jezebel over the ledge. She was eaten by the dogs. So, folks, join us tomorrow at 12:30 Texas time, 10:30 California time. Of course, that's 1:30 Eastern time for that. And then, of course, Rodney and I will be back this next Thursday. We are up at the last minute and a half. Rodney, you got any last things to say before it shuts us off?
Well, thanks, Scott, for another great show. Thanks for indulging me in all of my shenanigans, and it's great hearing you tonight. And, I look forward to next Thursday. We're going to have Frank, right?
We're going to have Frank. We're going to have Frank. And then the week after that, I think we're going to have Dave Souza from out there in California. Dave wants to come on one more time before the California primary. So we're working on that. I'll let you know as we get that sealed up. Anyways, we want to thank everybody. We got just a few seconds left. We are going to send it out with some Sweet Baby James.
Young cowboy, he lives on the range. His horse and his cattle are his only companions. He works in the saddle and he sleeps in the canyon, waiting for summer, his pastures to change. And as the moon arises, he sits by his fire, thinking about women and glasses of beer, and closing his eyes as the dogies retire, he sings out a song which is soft but it's clear, as if maybe someone could hear. Good night, you moonlight ladies, rock-a-bye, sweet baby Jane. Deep greens and blues are the colors I choose. won't you let me go down in my dreams and rock her by sweet baby James. Now the 1st of December was covered with snow, so was the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston. Though the Berkshires seemed dreamlike on account of that frosting, with 10 miles behind me and 10,000 more to go. There's a song that they sing when they take to the highway, a song that they sing when they take to the sea, a song that they sing of their home in the sky. Maybe you can believe it if it helps you to sleep, but singing works just fine for me. So good night, you moonlight ladies, rock-a-bye, sweet baby Jane. Deep dreams and blues are the colors I choose. Won't you let me go down in my dreams and rock her by sweet baby Jane?